make sure you're in fellowship as we continue here in our analysis of verse 16, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, dealing with the final sentence here of this section of this paragraph. The wrath has come upon them to the utmost. This looks at the ultimate consequence in regards to Jewish reversionism, specifically as headed by their religious reversionism and open hostility to the truth of Bible doctrine and those antagonistic to it. God's wrath here looks at his anger, and at a point in time as they fill up the measures of their sins, it comes to a certain saturation point of which God responds historically then in judgment against the Jews, bringing wrath upon them in the form of national discipline and ultimate dispersion from the land and things of this nature. And as we have seen in Old Testament citations, the Old Testament history of the Jews is replete in regards to warnings with respect to the Jews of forsaking God, as God is a jealous God, and he expects our undivided fidelity and attention to him and worship of him, and that if these things were not held close to the Jewish people as a nation, that they make any graven image in this regards, or any idol otherwise, that they can expect his wrath to come upon them, of which he has done throughout Jewish history. And that is the idea here in regards to his wrath, that as it has proceeded beforehand in Jewish history, it finds yet its ultimate complete or fulfillment in this respect in the future in this regards. And just pick up point 33, page 44 of our notes. As their history reveals, as we saw in point 32, looking at all those Old Testament verses, as their history reveals, their national reversionism of the past was mostly preceded with religious reversionism, idolatry, that they would not abstain from embracing their pagan neighbors. They failed to apply the doctrine of separation as a nation. And this brought them into touch with religious reversionism there in a liberal side of the coin of idolatry, paganism, which promotes sexual sins and things of this nature. And they became religious reversionists in that realm, and God responded adversely in judgment upon them as a people and as a nation. So 34, now Israel has the distinction of flopping in their religious reversionism, religious flip-flopping, going from a liberal approach, as we see that basically colors their past history in the Old Testament, to now at the time of Paul, and as it was at the time of Christ, a legalistic works approach. And essentially, the Jews, after they were readmitted back into land after their final dispersion, under Babylonian dispersion, later on down the line, their legal gurus got together and said, because we keep going into this liberal type of reversionism, embracing pagan idolatry, what we need to do in going into these gross immoral sins, we need to take the law, we need to build it up, and we need to build a hedge around it and protect it so that we do not go that direction again with respect to their approach to God and his plan for them as a nation. And what this ended up doing is providing a situation then, whereas they, if you will, were liberal in rejecting certain commandments in regards to paganism and idolatry and things of this nature, it put them in a position where they added to God's word, and this distorted God's word on the opposite end of the coin, on the legalistic end of the coin. By the time of Christ, as we know, they had removed grace completely from his word, and says now salvation is through our own religious system of keeping the law, being circumcised, being a racial Jew, and all of these other things. Salvation by relative good, relative righteousness, which their present religious reversionism so personifies. And it is a basic requirement, essentially, in all religious reversionism that teaches a future history in regards to people. And so they went from one extreme to the other. And both of them are just as detrimental in regards to their life. The Bible is designed to stand on its own. We don't have to give it our own ideas. All the information we have as it exists is all sufficient. And this provides a perfect balance of God's justice and righteousness and grace and all these other things necessary for the believer to serve God appropriately in time under the true Christian faith. So Israel has this history and distinction of going in from a liberal religious reversionist type of approach to a legalistic reversionistic religious type of approach. So 35, either approaches to religious reversionism are equally destructive, and both call God's wrath down upon them. 36 is continued. Historical wrath was surely recognized in the destruction and dispersion of Israel in 70 AD, of which he dispersed Israel by the Romans and basically removed any rights they had over the land at all in that regard. And they've been out of land now for going on close to 2,000 literal years within the last century of it anyway. So that obviously is a clearly recognized aspect of God's wrath and judgment upon them. Anytime God kicked them out of the land, that was an expression of God's wrath towards them. They recognize it. Luke 21, 20 through 24. When you see Jerusalem, Christ teaches, surrounded by armies, then recognize that her desolation is at hand. God's wrath expressed in a very recognizable way. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of the city depart. Let not those who are in the country enter the city. Because these are days of vengeance, nor that all things which are written may be fulfilled. Vengeance by whom? Vengeance by God. They're going to kill their Messiah. They're going to kill, continue to kill prophets, etc. And God is going to have his belly full of it. And historically, he is going to judge them as a nation in this respect and express his wrath towards them in judgment. Woe to those who are with child and those who nurse babes in those days. You're pregnant or have an infant, and you're put in this kind of situation, you're extremely handicapped. See? As it puts you in a position of having to scrounge for food and things of this nature. For there will be great distress upon the land and wrath to these people, that being the Jews. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led captive into all the nations. Definitely 70 AD, see. And Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So his wrath is obvious as is recognized in the dispersion of 70 AD and the destruction of Jerusalem. And Christ taught that that very thing would occur. So 37, as Christ's teaching states, the continued wrath is destined to extend in time until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled, which is referenced here to the second advent. Now, they are back in the land in this respect. And during the tribulational period, Daniel's 70th week, 7 years, they'll be in the land. But the time of the Gentiles is technical for the Gentiles ruling the world, seeking to rule the world in this regard. And understand that the Antichrist, who sets his grown up in regards to Jerusalem is a Gentile. He's Greek. We know about the Greeks. So, the time of the Gentiles of Christ here in regards to being fulfilled is the attempt of the nations, essentially, trying to bring about the one world religious political order under the Antichrist in fulfillment. So, it's reference to the second advent. So, 38, God used and uses evil people and nations to discipline the negative Jews. As might be stated, using evil as his whipping post of wrath upon them. And that is how God intervenes and brings judgment in many cases against nations. Why nations disappear because of evil that they're into, and his wrath is revealed and uses other evil to discipline their evil. So that is a situation that must be understood in regards to God and dealing with nations and dealing with people. And here again, it all stems from their religious reversionism. So 39, while the Jews generally enjoyed the upper hand of persecuting Christians into the 4th century, as we see in regards to his recorded force in the New Testament, and further on, even after the New Testament writings were completed, into the 4th century, with the rise of the Roman Emperor Constantine, and the establishment of Christianity as official state religion, at that point in time, the tide began to turn. Jews were generally in pursuit of Christians, but then Constantine came about, and he was convinced that this new religion was the religion to be a part of, and he then said, well, Christianity is now our new state religion. Now, whether this guy's a believer or not, that's not for me to know or second guess. He might have been, he may not have been. We know how it is in regards to people and their religions. People who embrace the Bible and embrace certain concepts and still miss the mark, you see. But, and for his sake, hopefully he is. But either way, in regards to history, when he then established Christianity as the Roman religion to be observed in this regard, the tide of the persecution of the Jews against the Christians obviously took a turn in the opposite direction. So 40, in the 4th and 5th centuries, theological anti-Semitism can be traced to theologians like Augustine and other early church fathers in regards to their writings and things and their attitudes in regards to Judaism and their attitudes in regards to Jews in general in a very antagonistic way. So 41, back then it was called replacement theology. That is, all the promises to Israel had been inherited by the church. That's how they made their error and misinterpreted in regards to church age dispensation. And it still runs rampant today under the system called covenant theology, sometimes called all-millennialism, which they take from Liam, is spiritual, it's metaphorical, figurative, not literal. And the millennium being fulfilled right now is simply just a elongated period of time, not exactly 1,000 years as we would understand it. And it is being fulfilled through the church, and representation of Christ. So, Catholicism promotes this type of theology. And it's called covenant theology today. That somehow the Jewish race, the Jews as a people, have no further place in God's plan in his future dispensations. We took it over. But that denies so much doctrine, so I can find it. But it had its beginnings way back when. So 42, from Augustine forward, the persecutor, the Jews, became the persecuted. 43, as the so-called church gained secular power, political power, etc., the Jewish people were condemned to eternal servitude for the death of Jesus, overreacting, and various secular laws were designed to keep them inferior to Christians. And of course, the irony is you can't miss them. They used to treat the Gentiles like dogs, and they underwent their own facing of this type of arrogance as a people under the principle what goes around comes around. If you don't think that's true, try something stupid and see what happens. I'm telling you, don't really. So the church gained secular power, and then all of a sudden, laws started getting passed, etc., on behalf of the Christians, but they were directed in antagonism towards the Jews. 44, and we'll give you some history of this. During the period from 590 to 1000 AD, the church fathers saw it as their duty to preach against the Jews. They were called, quote, close-minded, end quote, and, quote, ever-incredulous race, end quote, and a, quote, wicked and perfidious nation, end quote. Now, obviously, Paul recognizes their sins. That, in and of itself, recognizing the truth, is not anti-Semitism. These people became anti-Semitic in that they then simply categorized them, if you will, profiled, all in one category, as being nothing but a very evil people. And some of them are very evil. You see why they get run out of countries and stuff, because of certain individual Jews who create all kinds of turmoil, etc., in regards to nations. But you still must always keep it within the perspective of doctrine. They are still God's chosen people. And God has a plan for them. And that plan will be fulfilled. So the reactor factors, that's what you got to stay away from. 45, in Spain, in 613, Jews who refused baptism were expelled from the country. And their children over 7 years of age were taken to be reared as Christians. Removed from their homes. Adopted out. See? That's not right. I don't care who you are. But all under the name of Christianity and anti-Semitism. 46, all over Europe, the attitude was to restrict and humiliate the Jews. Now, the exception were Jews living in Carolingian Europe, where they enjoyed favorable status, which led to rapid multiplication of their settlements. In those areas, bishops, kings, and nobles granted them broad autonomy, self-governance, allowing them to administer their own communities and live according to their own laws. 47, and 632 to 638, King Dagobert expelled all Jews from France. As we see God's wrath coming and in process of coming to unto completion. 48, 694 to 711 AD, Jewish property was confiscated. Judaism was outlawed. The Jews were enslaved by Visigothic rule in Spain. 49, 717 to 720, Caliph Omar II imposed a heavy head tax on Jews and forced Jews to wear distinctive headdresses so they could be immediately identified in public. 50, 795 to 816, Pope Leo II introduced public disputations between Jews and Christians, resulting in forced conversions to Christianity. How ludicrous is that? Like you can force someone to be saved. But, you know, that's the attitude that religious reversionists will take. Force people to do things. That's what you see with the Jews. They're trying to force positive religion from staying away from teaching the truth. Can't can't make anybody stay away from anything if they firmly believe it and committed to it. So you can't jack with that part. You can't jack with their soul. You can't jack with their choices in life. You can cut off their arm, you can cut off their legs. You can't mess with the internal entities in regards to our beings. So, but, you know, Catholics obviously got big into this, as they were one of the primary promoters, as history developed in that regard. At 51 and 843, Agilbard of Lyons tried to abolish all privileges established by Charlemagne to undo what liberties he gave the Jews. In 52 and 1012 AD, Henry II of Germany expelled all Jews from Mainz. Can't live in Ohio anymore.
Oh, thanks.
That's what it is. Root them out of their homes. Make them move. Get off their land. All right, then we enter into the Middle Age period. 53 and 1073 to 1085, Pope Gregory VII prohibited Jews from holding office in Christian Europe. Any type of political office or having a position of authority, things of this nature. 54, 1096, the first crusade in Germany along cities of the Rhine River resulted in the killing of 12,000 Jews as genocide starts appearing. Interesting, it's early hold in Germany, this region, in Europe. 55, 1121, Jews were driven out of Belgium until they repented of killing Christ. That wouldn't be hard, yeah. Can I come back? Sorry, I've got a 6 in it. 56, 1144, Norwich, England, reported blood libel, which is the charge that Jews kidnapped Christian children and sacrificed them and used their blood in the Passover ritual. Things that were conjured up in regards to antagonism, etc., to bring the heat on. That's called blood libel. 57, 1146, the church decreed that all Christians volunteering to fight in the crusade would be released from all debts owed to Jews. And Jewish people are known to be very adept at running banks and things of this nature, financial categories. God gave them a real genius in this, which obviously maybe militia and SCA takes advantage of it, but otherwise. 58, 1145, 1153, the Second Crusade, Jews were purchased protection in fortified castles of barons and noblemen in the Rhineland, and were and then they were betrayed to ravaging mobs. 59, 1147, Jews in North Africa were persecuted by the Amalahad, those people. I want to say Almohades, but anyway. And fled the area. Then were converted to Islam or were forced to wear distinctive clothing. Almohads. 60 and 1170, in the Third Crusade, Jews accused of blood libel and massacred to give the people motivation to go after them. 61, 1182, King Philip of France expelled Jews, confiscated property, turned synagogues into churches, and forced Jews to wear identification badges. 62, 1189, at the coronation of Richard the Lionhearted, unexpected persecution of Jews broke out in England. Many Jews in London were killed, their houses burned, and the property confiscated by the crown. 63, 1198 to 1216, Pope Innocent III promoted a fourth crusade against Jews, demanding Christian rulers make Jews atone for the sin of deicide, killing a god. In 1215, the Fourth Lateran Council introduced the idea that the Jews wear special badges. 64, 1226 to 1274, King Louis the ninth demanded all Jews be baptized, burned 24 cartloads of the Talmud in Paris with the approval of Pope Gregory the Ninth. Many blood libels carried out in Germany and England during that period. 65 to 1290, Edward I banished Jews from England, forcing 16,000 to leave as they were dispersed all over. 66 to 1298, 1299, German knight Rindfleisch alleged he had received divine orders to kill all Jews. Persecution broke out in Franconia, Bavaria, and Austria, resulting in 140 Jewish communities being destroyed, 100,000 Jews killed. 67, 1306, Philip the Tall expelled 100,000 Jews from France and seized all their property. Jews were denied right to hold public office, keep Christian servants in work, or eat meat on Christian holidays. They're accused of desecrating the host, the wafer of communion, and poisoning wells. Mobs incited to violence by false accusations destroyed Jewish villages. From 1322 to 1359, France was officially without a Jewish population. 1338, arm leader, systematic campaign by German peasants in Alsace and the Rhine country to murder, rob, and annihilate whole Jewish communities was perpetrated. 1349, 1348 to 1350, Jews accused of poisoning wells and causing the Black Death, which was a bubonic plague that swept across Europe, killing at least one-third of the population. It was so called because it caused victims' skin to turn black. This epidemic did not infect the Jewish population so severely because of their strict sanitary practices. During this time, people did not have good hygiene generally. But the Jews, they did. But their immunity from it, the disease, led to rumors that lepers and Jews had plotted against Christians by poisoning their wells. Destroying poison wells. Mobs then, known as flagellants, moved without strength throughout Europe. I guess that's where they got gas from the Jews. They destroyed Jewish communities. The emperor granted immunity from prosecution to anyone who murdered a Jew. Not to make light of their murder. Other word. 70. In 1391, in Spain, Jews were forced to leave or be massacred and have their bodies dismembered. 70 communities were destroyed. 71, 1411 to 1412, Jews were forced to listen to Christian preaching in synagogues and be converted. Make them go to church. 72, 1421, Jews in Vienna had possessions confiscated and children forcibly converted. 270 were burned at the stake. 73, 1453, Jews of Poland had all civil rights withdrawn. 1483 to 1492, Spanish Inquisition, under direction of General Thomas de Torquemada, in 1483, perpetrated against Jews, primarily. He devised ingenious forms of torture to wring confessions from innocent people, resulting in heavy fines, confiscation of property, banishment, and often death. 300,000 Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492. Then we enter into the Reformation period. His wrath isn't completed. 75 to 1516, first ghetto established in Christian Europe in Venice. 76, 1542, Martin Luther tried to convert Jews to Christ. Failing in his effort, he turned against them and wrote a pamphlet entitled Against the Jews and Their Lies, with 200 pages of anti-Semitic rhetoric, calling Jews children of the devil and condemning them to hell. 4 days before his death, February 18, 1546, he delivered his last sermon entirely devoted to the obdurate Jew. To Luther, a dead Jew was a good Jew. He even used extreme profanity against him. Martin Luther, a guy that most theologians hold up as a great theologian, he was totally and completely anti-Semitic. You see. In 1593, Pope Clement VII banished them from the Vatican State, Rome. In 1624, ghettos were established in Italy. 1646, a Jews massacre during Poland's wars against Sweden and Russia. In 1670, blood libel charges excluded Jews from voting and holding office, as that bogus charge continued against them. 1719, Rhode Island, that's here in our country, law excluded Jews from voting and holding office as it moved over into our region. Then you had the so-called Enlightenment period. 1768 to 1788, Heidemack massacred Jews of Poland. 1793 and 1791, Russia established, quote, Pale of Settlements, end quote, limiting places where Jews could reside in 25 provinces of Tsarist Russia. In 1794, Jews had to pay double the taxes that were imposed on Christian merchants. 1824 and 1827, compulsory military service imposed on Jewish minors under 18 years of age in Russia. Men made to serve 25 years in the military. Many were abused. 1835, Nicholas I, known as the Iron Tsar and Russian Haman, considered Jews to be parasites on society and sought to destroy them because they were inassimilable. 1865, Jews both south and north of the U.S., were accused by newspapers, political leaders of aiding the enemy, smuggling, profiteering, and draft dodging during the Civil War. So they were targeted on both sides of the coin. 1877, Jews refused accommodations at Grand Union Hotel in Saratoga Springs, New York, during the summer session. Treated just like many treated the blacks. Blacks are not the only ones who have been enslaved, been treated this way, even in our country. Then we had the modern period. 1878 to 1879, in Germany, Adolf Stetzer preached anti-Semitism. Heinrich von Treitschke brought anti-Semitism into learning circles. Wilhelm Marr coined the word anti-Semitism in 1879. 89 and 1880, in America, signs appear saying, "We prefer not to entertain Hebrews." Jews were denied entrance to clubs, private schools, institutions, and associations. 1881 to 1884, pogroms, which were organizations to destroy certain other organizations, organized people in a military way, swept over southern Russia against Jews living in the Pale, causing immigration of Russian Jews to the West. 1891 and 1893, Karl Luger, mayor of Vienna, introduced the anti-Semitic Christian Social Party. Adolf Hitler influenced toward anti-Semitism by Luger. In 1895, in France, Captain Alfred Dreyfus was falsely accused of treason and sentenced to life in prison because he was Jewish. 1893 and 1899, Houston Stuart Chamberlain, who was a racist and anti-Semitic author, published Foundations of the 19th Century, which became a basis of National Socialist ideology. It postulated pseudo-racist theories of a superior Aryan race, which permeated and poisoned German minds and were embodied in the philosophy of Nazism. 1904, The Protocols of the Elders of Zion was produced by the secret police of Russia's Nicholas II. The book tried to make the Jews the scapegoats for Russia's problems and implied they had a conspiracy to conquer and rule the world. Henry Ford published a work in America under the title The International Jew from the Ford Automotive Conglomerate. 95, 1906, 1913, pogroms and boycotts against Jews in Russia and Poland. 96, 1950, the Ku Klux Klan, a white supremacy organization, was reorganized and espoused anti-Semitism, among their other prejudice. 97, 1917 to 1921, pogroms in the Ukraine, Poland, Siberia, Mongolia, and Hungary resulted in the death of thousands of Jews. 1938-1933, Hitler began boycotts against Jews and started to build concentration camps. 1939-1935, Hitler enacted Nuremberg Laws, depriving Jews of German citizenship and setting in motion a systemized plan for complete isolation and extermination of European Jewry. There are people still today that advocate that genocide of the Jews in World War II did not happen. They think it's all fantasy. In fact, I have some ex-in-laws that held to that. You go, good grief. How can you be so blind to even historic facts? But that's what beliefs will get you, especially wrong ones. 20 to 1930s, Eastern U.S. colleges established a quota system for Jews under a variety of guises. Christians were preferred over Jews for office, sales, and executive positions. Jews entering teaching were excluded from faculty positions. Jews were unwelcome in fashionable sections of the cities and suburban developments in America. 101-1938, Charles E. Coughlin, a Roman Catholic priest, began weekly anti-Semitic broadcasts in Detroit, Michigan. 102-1939, the Holocaust of World War II began with German occupation of Poland. 103-1940, extermination of Jews began with the use of Zyklon B gas. Jewish Warsaw Ghetto was formed. 104-1942, under the final solution to exterminate Jews of Europe, originated in Berlin on January 20th. Jews were transferred from Belgium, Holland, and other European countries to death camps in Auschwitz. 105-1945, the Holocaust ended with an estimated 6 million Jews killed during World War II, just for being Jewish. So 106, anti-Semitism remains alive and well in the 21st century. So, I guess you might say that God's wrath has been after them for quite a while now. 107, the historical notes cited here are from Ballinger's commentary, 1 Thessalonians. 108, Paul sets forth here, bringing us back into the context of our verse. Paul sets forth the Jews and their religious reversionism as examples to the Thessalonians as to the extent Satan's world will go to suppress the truth. The extent that Satan will go. 109, the world's ruler uses counterfeit religion under negative volition in opposition to sound Bible doctrine to combat the potential expression of positive volition. Understand that. Satan's into religion big time. He is called the Angel of Light. See. The illumination of men in regards to world as creation, God, and things of this nature. And Satan pulls no punches. And what he is after is to trip up any positive volition otherwise in regards to apprehending the truth in regards to God and His plan and His Word. And He uses these things to combat the truth and those who stand for the truth otherwise, to the degree of hostility, obviously, determining in regards to how far one gets into this religious reversionism. 110, religious reversionism throughout history is only a warm-up for his big lie in this regard via the Antichrist, where he proclaims himself as Messiah. The big lie of that he puts upon this planet, the people of this planet, who are negative. Try to turn the whole world in his direction. And that will be our subject of discussion when we get there. 2 Thessalonians 2, 1 through 12, especially verses 11 and 12, which we'll read here. And for this reason, which the context is the Antichrist. For this reason, God will send upon them, that being negative volition, a deluding influence, so that they might believe what is the lie, literally, what is false, as he cons the human race into accepting him as being the guru who's going to usher them into utopia. See, in order, and this is their judgment, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth, but took pleasure in wickedness. They'll adhere to this new religious system that the Antichrist will present and offer to the world, and they will start worshiping him. See? And that is the biggest con game of all times of religious reversionism, is it not? The obvious. So, what we see in regard to religious reversionism throughout history is simply a warm-up. And how Satan tries to stamp out positive volition otherwise, and for the big one, in which then, as we know, during that period, if you don't have the mark of the beast, you'll be hunted like a, you know, a wild beast by a hound dog. People will be killed and martyred, positive volition, in great numbers. And God's wrath will be revealed. So 111, what the Thessalonians experienced with Team Paul here is thus the norm, not the exception, and thus no reason for alarm. And this is part of the emphasis that he's bringing out. The Jews, well, aren't they a religious people? They're persecuted. Yeah, that's the norm. So, religious reversionism is a norm to try to suppress the truth. These people are zealots in that regard. 112, any religious organization that denies deliverance from eternal condemnation, hindered from being saved in that realm, phase one, and or loss of the prize, deliverance from loss of SG3, which is a true deliverance, is reversionist religion. Otherwise, we need to get ourselves aligned with these people. Matthew 23:15. So at least had the integrity of Paul to not gloss over these types of people in regards to their evil, and call a spade a spade. These people, if they're not in line with the truth of Bible doctrine, sufficient for people to make spiritual advance, maximize their SG3 and get the prize, then their religion is off or not in regards to their approach. Obviously, looking beyond just simple phase one salvation, where that's the funding mentality. Well, if you're a believer, then you're all right. Not quite. Matthew 23:15. As again, Christ proclaims regards to the Jews and their religious reversionism, under the heads of scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because he traveled about on sea and land to make one proselyte. When he becomes one, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. In regards to phase one, Colossians 2:18. Let no one keep defrauding you of your prize. Well, Paul must think that's pretty important. See? By delighting in self-abasement, that's false humility. False humility. That's what religious reversionists tend to project in regards to their persons. And the worship of angels as an example in regards to the false ideology that religious reversionists get into. Why we hold to the importance of making sure we're accurate in regards to how we describe things, such as angels, to make sure you understand that in the Bible they're only depicted in the male species, the male gender. And you see no baby angels and things of this nature. But you've got people that all over the place that worship angels, see. And their misunderstanding in regard to taking his stand on the things literally he has seen inflated without cause by his fleshly mind. And that points to a religious type of reversionism. And then 2 John 7 through 11. As John himself says, many deceivers have gone out into the world. Here, specifically, false teachers that held to a form of Gnosticism that denies a hypostatic union. And many religions do it in principle, whether they're blatant about it or not. Those who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the Antichrist. Watch yourselves that you may not lose what we have accomplished, but that you may receive a full reward. See, it's important to John, too, in phase two. That you receive the full reward. And if people are embracing religious thoughts and beliefs that deny that, then it's religiosity. It's not true Christianity. Anyone who goes, as he does not end there, and anyone who goes too far and does not abide in teaching of Christ goes on ahead, literally, to project their own ideas and philosophies, does not have God, the one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive it into your house and do not give him a greeting. For the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask you to continue to bless us in our understanding of it. Keep us fast and true in regards to its integrity. Bring us back for next Bible class safe and sound in Jesus' name. Amen.